Hey there! Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower-than-low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
This episode is brought to you by Shopify. Whether you're selling a little or a lot, Shopify helps you do your thing, however you cha-ching. From the launch your online shop stage, all the way to the we just hit a million orders stage. No matter what stage you're in, Shopify's there to help you grow. Sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/special offer, all lowercase. That's shopify.com/special offer.
Get 5 hilarious party games in the Jackbox Party Pack 5. It's now available on Xbox One, PS4, Nintendo Switch, Steam, and more. Play games like You Don't Know Jack Full Stream, Split the Room, Mad vs. City, Patently Stupid, and Zeeple Dome with friends this weekend. Visit jackboxgames.com for more info.
So now that y'all have heard the collective wailing of the fan base, this listener would very much like to know how the crew reacted to the mid-season finale. So I just, because I think other listeners like me will need this little reminder, let's remind everybody what happened in the mid-season finale. So am I correct that this is the episode where they storm Caligari's lab and everything gets blown up?
Yeah, it's the duel with Chamberlain.
Okay, so I'm going to start this because I had a lot of reactions. I had a lot of feelings about this episode. So if it hasn't been established before, I joined the team here about 2 years ago now, so a year and a half ago. And at that time, there was a conversation about whether or not the team should tell me what happens in the show or not, and I opted for not. I was like, I don't want to know, no spoilers, which was very challenging in some particular staff meetings, but it meant that as each episode came out, I was coming at it fresh and I had no idea what was going on. And also that Jim kept threatening to kill my favorite characters if I wouldn't do things that he wanted me to. He's great, guys. So that episode, let's see. First of all, I was really, really mad that Elizabeth got so injured. I was really, really mad that it wasn't 100% clear that Chamberlain was dead because I really wanted Chamberlain to be dead.
Eleanor definitely had a weekly check-in with me about whether Elizabeth was going to be okay.
Yeah, that really happened. I kept being like, she's not dead, right? Like, she's not dead, right,
she's
Jeffrey?
Sort of dead.
No. Let me say this. Okay, so this gets a little bit ahead again, and I'm sorry to derail, but this is important. It has always been in my head that because the question of that Clayton and Jim used to duel just ferociously over was whether our first series was ultimately a tragedy or a comedy. And, you know, a tragedy ends with a funeral, and a comedy ends with a wedding. The last episode is a funeral, but in my head, West and Elizabeth travel off and do kind of a combined wedding and honeymoon. West ended up taking Elizabeth's last name, making him in the end Dr. Snidge. Which I always thought was a kind of end transformation for West.
That's pretty delightful.
I just wanted to point out that technically the last episode is two funerals.
Yeah, I guess that's true. Yeah.
Anyway, sorry, I totally derailed you. I really apologize. Maybe I'll cut that and put it somewhere else.
I had so many feelings about that episode. I just remember getting, so Jeffrey and I both have day jobs, but we spend a lot of time on GChat talking to each other just about like heart life things and also not. But I just remember getting on chat after listening to that episode and being like, I have so many feelings. I have to talk to you about them right now. I hope you're not in a meeting because I really need to talk about this. But mostly I felt like at the end of that mid-season episode, I was like, I think they're all dead. I think all the characters, I hope not, but I kind of think all the characters might be dead. And I was really worried about that. Yeah. Except Chamberlain, I wanted Chamberlain to be dead. And as we established in earlier conversations, that did not work out the way I wanted it to. Okay, so those are my reactions. Anybody else have anything?
I think in Our First City, there's been this sort of like balancing act with comedic violence and hard-hitting, realistic violence. Like, I wrote an episode where Snidge gets beaten with a rebar piece.
So let me. That was actually physically difficult for me to do when I was in the process of doing that scene. I had to step away from it like three or four times because of how visceral it was. Because that was the direction in the script, if I remember correctly. Yeah. It's like, this is not supposed to be funny.
Right.
This is not a campy moment.
It's not a boink. And later Snitch gets, reanimated with a car battery. So it's a balancing act. I heard that episode and I was like, it's fight scenes, but it's Jim. Jim loves comedy. He's going to really nerf it and it'll be okay to listen to. And I listened to it and it is horrific.
It's really hard.
It's powerful. And I was like, this is really hard to listen to, but it's also sort of Chamberlain's swan song. And Chamberlain is death. You know, he never brings anyone back to life. So it's sort of appropriate that he lives by the sword. He dies in a flurry of violence. Other than being a disturbed listener, I was very worried playing Dr. Morrow. I was much more comfortable doing the Morrow voice when he was speaking through a voice box. And I was like, I want him to sound like Michael Caine when he gets out because I want to do a Michael Caine. And it turned out like, oh, I'm bad at that. And it's like, okay, well, if Morrow's just in the background, I'll occasionally just say a few lines. And then it was like, here's a death scene. And this is like very important. And I was really anxious to act in that scene because I was doing a dialect that I'm not super comfortable with, and I wanted to make it sincere so that the audience isn't like, wow, what a scene, except for that jerk who's like, hello, I got killed.
Well, I'm dead now.
Oh, no.
What's the use of doing all those push-ups if you can?
So I had many feelings, both in the performance and in the listening. But ultimately, I'm glad that the episode is the way it is.
It really earns a lot of the emotional stuff that comes later in the season, I feel like, in this way that's really satisfying. Yeah.
So you've forgiven it?
I don't know. I mean, yeah, I guess. I mean, that's why I like the show, is because it makes me feel all those feelings.
In my defense, the original plan for the entire season was always going to kill Morrow.
Hmm.
Morrow was always going to die. The episode 19 was always going to be Morrow's funeral. He was going to be slowly dying of the thawing process. He was just going to be progressively getting sicker and sicker. The problem that I faced was that I needed Chamberlain to be a villain. I needed the plot armor gone. And I needed him to be a threat. And really, Chamberlain has never been able to do anything of lasting influence because of plot armor. Mm-hmm. So he shot Elizabeth in the first season, but she came back. He shot Andrew, but she came back. And every time he's gone up against Caligari, she like easily brushes him aside. Like there's the scene in season 4 where she just drops him on Davenport's table unconscious. And so in order to make him a believable threat, he had to be a believable threat. So I needed someone to die. And we were already killing Moro. And I think he was in like maybe one scene after mine. And that was it. So I kind of pitched this to the table. And by pitch this, I mean I wrote the whole scene without telling anyone, presented it, and said, can I do this? And which is tends
Ask
to be my writing style.
Not permission.
And
Jim's good at the shadow pitch.
But so that is how that came about, was because I needed him to be a threat for his final outing. I will also say, while recording it, my favorite moment for recording that episode was asking Jeffrey to do multiple getting stabbed through the chest takes and like doing gushing blood sounds from my mouth and then turning around and Jeffrey just being like, ugh. Okay, no, go ahead, do some more.
It was really hard to listen to like a minute or two of that just straight in headphones.
So what I loved about that episode in particular was we always knew Caligari was a protagonist and a hero of sorts, but when Chamberlain was going through and doing his merciless murdering of innocents, and she walks over, she rips open a control panel, she does some science real quick, and boom, she's hacked into the comm systems and confronts him. And that hero moment right there to stop the carnage was like, it was so Caligari and so on point. And it was, I remember doing it and listening to it, and just, I got chills multiple times. Every single time that she would do that, I would get chills. And I love that moment because I love Caligari. So,
I mean, I know, because I've talked to Jim about it a lot, how much you love both of those characters, both Chamberlain and Caligari. And that was the other thing about that episode that is so juicy and satisfying, is that it is like both of those characters getting to do the things that they are the best at, and they're doing them at each other. And it's, yeah, it's great.
Also, Jim made me design a sound of shooting a hologram, so. Thanks.
Good times. What would you consider the iconography? Guys, it's getting late. That word is hard for me.
Iconography.
Iconography. What would you consider the iconography of the show? Important symbols, phrases, I mean, besides for science.
So like the iconography within the world of Heartlife, or outside the world and in our world?
I think inside the world.
I feel like the earlier work like really did a great job introducing like the propaganda kind of feel for what the policies we're seeing on a day-to-day basis, like the Nutriment ads and just that the tower loves you, or the board of directors loves you, all of that kind of buzz speak coming at you perpetually, I think is really effective.
Yeah, I think actually both kind of inside the world and outside of the world, which I think is kind of another interesting question. There's actually a couple of mole-based pieces of art. I think about Ellie is wearing the Mole People Revolution shirt designed by Tyne Lowe. There was also a Don't Feed the Moles print that was just great. I don't have the artist of that right offhand, but yeah, a lot of great kind of like revolutionary art and propaganda art that got subverted.
Oh, and the image of Neil's shovel for the Hendersonian movement.
The shovel definitely stands out in my mind as one of the more like simple, iconic images. That and the tower, which we've talked about already, just the beautiful symbol and simplicity of what a tower can be. Even if we changed it from time to time, you know, how many, you know, tiers it had or how tall it looked, that that image transcends both the tower, both inside the show and outside the show, as being just such a simple and iconic image for what the company represents.
With Shovels, I really have to mention that at the launch of the series, Ryan Sheely presented Clayton and myself with golden shovels with small plaques on them, celebrating breaking ground on our fair city. And those are both hanging on the walls of our respective offices. And I look at it every day when I'm getting ready to work and getting ready to edit and like getting down to work on shows. And
I need this mental picture. Is it like a trowel or is it like a
no,
like a
it's
full
like
size
it's like
shovel
a
shovel.
Three quarters size. It's like it's a garden shovel, but roughly the size of like a trenching tool. So
like a spade.
Yeah, yeah, okay. It's like 3 feet tall.
And building off the tower, like, it reminds me all over again what a great campaign the Hope of Heart Life is, the tower above and the tower below.
That's
and
good.
How well set up it was to fail. And also, like, immediately be, like, lambasted by the people that it had failed. Like, the changing the Hope of Heart Life to the Nope of Heart Life is something that I remember hurt me very, very deeply. It's like, no! We had such great ideas.
I mean, I think one of the, at least for me, the joys of the sort of building the world comes, like, I took a lot of improv classes, and one of the things they teach you about world building is, like, taking things from earlier and then just keep reusing them. So, like, if in a scene someone's eating Fruit Loops, anytime someone needs, it's like, hey, do you want to eat something? Yeah, I've got Fruit Loops. So then, like, next time someone's at a restaurant and it's like, yes, I'll have the Fruit Loops or the Fruit Loops or whatever. And so, like, anytime someone eats, it's Fruit Loops. And I think one of the fun parts was finding those bits that you could just latch onto and then keep reusing and reappropriating, or finding those things, like the fact that everything Herbert West puts together, he voices himself. So like the security panels are Herbert West voice, and the digital reconstructor is Herbert West voice.
His egg timer.
Listen, that's certainly not because sometimes we would find that we needed a new sound effect or a voice for a door, and Ryan was there with a really good mic.
But also, like, I'm trying to think of the fact that all the security panels, the code is always 58008.
Yeah.
Or Neil Henderson's always like, can everybody do that? Like, finding those bits to make,
can everybody do that?
To help build the world and getting to play with the writers in that way.
I think one of the ones that sneaks up on you over the course of the show is concept of family. I mean, it's very obvious in Elizabeth and Herbert and Snidge and Caligari, but then you have Sandy and Clay who build their own family, and then in the end you have the Island of Misfits with Simon and Dora and Switchblades. They sort of become their own family, and really the only one who's sort of left completely on his own, because then we also have Archie and Grayson who go out on their own, and everybody has somebody except Foster, who is the he and Chamberlain.
Yeah,
they're the two without families.
They have each other in the end.
Well, I mean, Chamberlain has Foster.
Okay, so what kinds of music do you think any of the characters listen to?
I feel like music is pretty much only of two kinds in Heart Life. It's either it's produced by the company, and that's what you hear in the show, that's what you hear sometimes in an elevator, or it's something that the people are creating themselves. That's it's folk music, essentially.
So maybe to open it up, if these characters had access to Spotify right now, what music would they listen to?
I mean, we've established that Britney Spears survived into Our Fair City and became sort of what pseudo-religious music, right?
What?
Didn't we reestablish that at one point? Weren't they listening to a Britney Spears song in like a folk setting?
Gosh, I hope not, because we didn't buy the rights.
I don't remember that.
No, we maybe cut that.
That might have like been kicked around and nixed by our lawyers.
There was a really cool idea where pop songs had gotten twisted over the years.
Oh yeah, they got the lyrics rewritten to be propaganda for the company.
Yeah, that shows up in some of the live shows.
There was a Robin song. Maybe that is the Britney you were thinking of. Yeah.
But Dr. West totally digs Toxic.
So I will say that if you join the Patreon, we have a monthly mixtape that we release for different characters on the Patreon. And I love making them. I think they're really fun. So I did one for Clear Skies Tim that had a lot of kind of what I think of as like neo-folk. So it had like Nico Case on it and some Mountain Goats on it and other like guitar forward like angsty music. And then I recently did one for the Time Traveler that I was really pleased with that has at least two songs that are actually about time travel on them. On it, so that's a thing that's out there in the world. If you are want to follow this question up like really deeply, but that the Time Traveler mix had this song that the chorus is in the future everybody gets a kitten every day, and it just makes me really happy because I feel like Lindsay the Time Travel deserves a happy ending.
She does.
Yeah. Right.
Is Like a Virgin on Clear Skies Tim's
no.
station?
No, it's not.
Damn it.
Now I feel like hold on, I'm actually going to look it up.
Chamberlain listens to screams. just
like screamo or just people screaming?
No, just people scream.
So he does make his own music.
Yes. I imagine like in the movie Event Horizon when they're playing back the recording of the
crew mutilating the crew each log, other.
Like... that audio is just on a loop in his headphones.
Oh, I made a mix for Veronica, which I was actually listening to on my bike today because it's good for my like pump up mood moment. And it has You Don't Own Me, No Scrubs by TLC, Cake's Song, Short Skirt, Long Jacket, Kesha's Woman, and then Warsaw from Dessa. And a couple of other things. But yeah, I'm really, that's what I'm proud of.
I think Nathan started listening to a bunch of punk bands like right after they sold out. Like the best indication that a band has sold out is that Nathan Rourke starts listening to them.
Because he's the worst.
He is the worst.
Sorry, fans of Nathan.
Yeah, are there any? Is that a thing?
I mean, Nathan's parents, maybe?
Nah.
Nathan's really big into Dashboard Confessional.
Yeah.
Is he one of those people who feels it necessary to say, but only their later stuff?
Question. So OFC has been part of all of our lives here for nearly a decade. And we have a new project. So do you plan on taking some time off to adjust, or are you just planning on jumping into the new production ASAP? There's some crying with that laughter.
Yeah, no. So two funny stories about that. So we started work on Unwell, a Midwestern Gothic mystery, about 2 years before we finished Our Fair City. That's when pre-production and pre-planning started. So I have been living more heavily in that world for about 2 years now, which is very weird. Clayton kind of stepped up and did a lot of the work on leading the company and landing Our Fair City. And I kind of moved over and then was joined by Eleanor and kind of bringing unwell into life, and we've kind of slowly been moving folks over on that.
So we have already written all of season one, and we are partway into recording season one, which means that, like, Jeff and I have already been very, very deeply into the new project. Jim has already been super deeply into the new project, and we are trying really hard to give Ryan a break before we pull him in, because he really deserves one.
Yeah. I will note that kind of in answer to that question, the day that we released the final episode, which was July 4th, very fittingly, I had to work that day, and so I put the episode up. Yeah, I agree. Put the episode up very early in the morning, and worked at my day job, and then was going home and had told myself that I was going to sit down and finish editing the trailer for Unwell that we're working on. Actually, by the time you're hearing this, it's probably come out. So I was going to finish editing the trailer and going to put that out and start doing the social media and et cetera push. And what actually happened was I came home and then I felt like all of the feelings and I immediately went to sleep. Like I just like fell over. So that was your break. Yeah, I forgot to take a break, and then my body said, no, you're turning off right now. And then I did take a break for several days, and it was very nice. But we're all really excited to be bringing Unwell into the world. And so, I was just going to say, in some ways, a change is as good as a rest. Also, if you...
Also, a rest is good.
Yeah, if you never rest, then you never notice.
It's called living the dream because you never get to sleep.
Oh, jeez. Our fair city has been a monster of a project for all of us and me personally. I think when I totaled it up, the total amount of time I spent editing was over 1,700 hours into the show. And so, yeah, I was at the conclusion. I made a post on social media about this. I thought I'd feel relief, but in the end, I really just felt a really deep nostalgia and sense of sadness and satisfaction. And certainly, there was a degree of relief to it. But as Eleanor pointed out, I will be the lead sound designer for Unwell, but I intended to take a very long break, and as such, I didn't read the scripts until actually very recently, and now I'm already getting the itch, even though it's only been like 10 days, whatever, since we really released our fair city. But reading the scripts, it's going to be an exciting, it's going to be a huge departure from the audio structure of Our Fair City. It's going to be a much different experience and a completely different challenge, and it's going to be great. If the production is half as good as the writing, it's going to be fantastic. So,
and since that's your part, I feel pretty trusting that it's going to work out. It's going to be great.
Do we just all want to go around and talk about what it's like? Because well, to end the show and to be just have been working on it for so long, because, like, I mean, it for all of us, it's been years. Like,
I was 19 when we started the show.
Wow.
I was a child.
We're married.
Yeah, we are. That's still super crazy.
So, hold on. Just to be really on point about this. Is it appropriate to tell our listeners that you are married because of Our Fair City?
I would say
yeah,
so.
We met through the show. We met at the season 3 launch party.
Yeah.
That's
awesome.
I knew of him as Cute Steven, who works at Northwestern for a long time.
Awesome.
Also the guy who writes the show. But yeah, no, it's because of Our Fair City that Shipped. We're married.
And then
yeah.
we re-met at a party that Tara's had.
Birthday party.
Oh. And that was when we started actually talking.
Mm-hmm. Was her Under the Sea?
Under the Sea?
Yep.
That's awesome.
Yep.
She'll love to hear that. She's going to take credit on it.
So it's because of Our Fair City and Tara Sheely.
So that's how I even know you and Tara's because of
that. Yeah, for sure.
Not everybody gets a spouse out of Our Fair City. But most of us do.
Really? Because
how many? Tara and Ryan? Or you were together before Our Fair City, is
yeah,
that correct?
We were together in Florida.
All right, look, guys, I don't know the timelines. I just know there's a lot of romance.
You're gonna rewrite an alternate timeline where all of the relationships are because of the show.
Yeah.
Yeah. Okay,
I think we might be the only marriage because of Our Fair City.
You deserve that credit. Oh, you're adorable.
Thanks.
They're doing a really adorable thing right now. You can't even see it.
It's gross.
It's so gross.
What?
Ryan can edit in the vomit sound effects
yep.
later. And Jim's parents will be so happy.
Oh, that's another iconic thing that happened.
Vomit noises?
Vomit noises, because I put it in the first script that I ever... Was it the first script I wrote?
It was at least
yeah,
one
the
of
first,
them.
It was in the first script I wrote, and my dad got a kick out of it. So then it happened in the second season. I put it in because my dad liked it the first time. And then I put it in the third season. And then someone pointed out that it kept happening. So I'm like, well, now it's got to be a thing.
I'm glad it's a thing. It never got old.
The worst one was when in the mold, in the alternate timeline. I don't know if this is how you wrote it, but what I envisioned was... when Snidge was caught in the meat wall and he literally like vomited himself out of existence as he transforms into pure meat wall.
As terrible deaths go, it's pretty on point, yeah. It was, I'll say, I don't know if we're going around the table again, but I'll say it was very strange for me because I was so heavily involved in the early parts of the show. And you know, building the world and helping to shape what you guys made so enormous after that, and then to step back and only come in as the narrator. I only ever saw other people in the cast if it was an opening or one of the launch parties. Or they happened to have a recording session before or after me. Like, other than that, it was like me and Jeffrey and Catnip in the studio, and all I got was the narration. So in a lot of ways, I kind of feel like Eleanor in that I didn't hear the show until y'all heard the show, and I had no idea who the other people were or what the story was shaping into, aside from how Foster saw it. And only in the way that I was allowed to react to it. Like, what is happening before and after my specific lines? Unless we did a table read and I got to be there, which sadly I missed a bunch of those, which meant it was really weird. So yeah, it was super cool for me as somebody who, you know, had that transition going from knowing everything to knowing almost nothing and getting to experience it as it went along. So yeah, that was just me. It's your turn.
Oh, I guess I get to go. I thought of another iconic Our Fair City thing, which is the story of Our Fair City continues, which when we do the table reads, we'd all say at the exact same time and then throw our scripts in the middle of the yeah. floor. And then... at the halfway point, everyone would get up and talk, and then I'd go and shuffle around and reorganize them so I didn't have to talk to people. I don't know. It's one of those things because I just keep moving that, like, I don't necessarily have... It's hard to be like, I have feelings about things, but, again, this is something that... possibly could not have happened. Like, without Our Fair City, I'm not sure I probably wouldn't be writing as much as I do, as I have been. Like, I've written multiple
audio drama scripts. I wrote a book. I'm working another one. I got a master's in writing. And without Our Fair City, I don't think I would be doing that because I wouldn't have had the opportunity. It would just be me by myself. I probably wouldn't know anyone in this room. I'd still know some of you because we work together, but without Our Fair City, we probably wouldn't have hung out because I don't do that. Without the opportunity that Our Fair City gave me to write on a regular basis, to work on this craft, to learn what audio drama is, that it's a thing that you can do, that there are other opportunities, even here in Chicago, to do it, I wouldn't be who I am right now. So there's that. And I know, like, there are Ansel has a audio drama show that he puts up, and there are other audio drama shows that are put up here in Chicago that people are involved with, and some of that might not exist without what we've done, without this beginning point. So that's me.
I want to talk about mental illness. That sounded like it's
take it away.
A one-liner, but I have panic attacks, and I was a theater major, an actor, and did improv for years and stage work, and in my sort of adult life, these panic attacks got worse and more focused around stage, which sucks because that's what I loved to do. In fact, when we were doing the Our Fair City Live stuff, the first couple shows where I was playing Archibald Funny Pants, I would routinely have panic attacks before or during the show. And to have this project, which allowed me to still be creative and still act and play multiple characters, but in like this really safe space among this community of like friend collaborators that I had made, was such a safe harbor to me in a period of transition where I was kind of viewing the one thing that I really love to do becoming not reasonably obtainable for me anymore. Our Fair City allowed me to continue to act and be creative in a way that didn't freak me out all the time. So in addition to like getting to be part of something bigger than myself and getting to contribute creatively, It was just like this wonderful medicinal thing that I feel very fortunate to have participated in. I wish that during the years I got to work on Our Fair City, I would have been more present and like taken it all in and appreciated it more. Now that it's wrapped up, I realize like how special it was. So if any of you listening are part of something, like if you play Dungeons and Dragons every week or something like that, or have a friend group that does something, like really try to relish it while it exists. Because eventually, you know, people grow up, people move away, and things change. So I feel very fortunate to have been a part of Our Fair City.
Our Fair City was my first time working in a series. So I got to learn and grow with characters that I was developing with the community, and also learning so much about storytelling from the ways that the writing team were building this world as they were going. And I got to piggyback on a lot of what people have been saying, like what Jim was saying about how I'm not sure I would be as invested in the disciplines that I love if I hadn't been inspired so much from the community that I found with Our Fair City, and the different ways that the artists here have taken those skills and dedicated them to additional tangential projects. And I've met some of my favorite people through this group. So I'm really excited to continue working with them in the future. Cautious optimism, as always. And I'm always going to be really proud of the work I see a lot of them doing on their own, too. The people that have moved away are still doing really amazing things, and I'm so excited to see what Heart Life and Unwell turns into, and And everything that the team has done about capturing the history of the show through the fan art that they celebrate and spread around online, and the merch with the fun images and the comic books and the art book, it's done with so much love and so much reverence for the community they've put together, and that means a ton.
Well, I feel like that should have been the last question, but I kind of want to ask this one about other similar podcasts. So Soap Lady asks, if we like R for City and want to try similar podcasts, what would you recommend? I feel like other audio dramas that people are into, or things that feel thematically relevant, or, you know, what do you got, folks?
I mean, I think, at least for me, Victoriosity is one that kind of walks that line between just like telling a good story, but also being comedic and tongue-in-cheek, but also having stakes and just really interesting world building. For those of you who don't know, Victoriosity, it's this steampunk comedy where like London has just like increased in size because they came up with a way to harness lots of energy using a tower.
Weird.
I know, it's funny, but like one of my favorite lines about it is like that London expanded as far into the channel until they hit French gunboats. But like there's a cybernetic Queen Victoria with Prince Albert, who has been like just kind of grafted into her.
Ooh.
But it's also like a murder mystery, and it's wacky and fun, and in sort of my love of like the comedic side of Our Fair City, it hits those notes.
One that I got really into that has sadly already ended, but has plenty of material out there if you just need to fill like 6 months of your commute, is Wolf 359. Did anybody else get into that one? Which is a fabulous sci-fi. It starts off as like a romp, and then it gets real serious towards the end, and is I just absolutely loved it. Everybody who worked on that did a great job. Wolf359radio.fm, I think.
This is behind, I think, Stitcher Premium's paywall. It used to be behind Earwolf's paywall, but there's a comedy audio drama called Uncle Bertie's Botanarium. It's got Jermaine from Flight of the Conchords. The sound design is wonderful. They have all these like in-universe songs. It's sort of a wacky like Edwardian Empire era thing. And the music is great. Obviously the guy from Flight of the Conchords is hilarious. And it's an audio drama. I really recommend it if you have the cash to pay Stitcher Premium.
Is it in the Harry Potter verse?
No, it's not in the Harry Potter first.
Well, I mean, because Bertie bought an arium, like Bertie bought beans.
So no, yes.
Is that just purely coincidental?
Or? It is Uncle Bertie's botanarium, Bertie bought beans. I don't know. It's about in this universe, botanists are like revered and plants are highly regulated. Like people who are not scientists aren't allowed to touch plants because people have like a weird sensual ecstasy about plants in this world, and it's never fully explained. And so Jermaine is like, he's a sort of lousy botanist, but also a nobleman, and so he treats everybody poorly, and he is secretly becoming more and more addicted to like the sensual delights of touching a plant.
Sounds delightful.
I love it.
I want to take a quick moment to plug three great shows, and there are so many out there right now, but for specific things, as a palate cleanser that is totally different, but maybe really restorative after Our Fair City, The Far Meridian, which is gorgeous and hallucinatory and really well written and acted and just beautiful. It's about a young person who is in a
a lighthouse that appears in a different location every episode, and about their kind of efforts to go out and explore the world as their lighthouse appears in different places. If you like the world building and the kind of the scope of Our Fair City, I really recommend a podcast called The Bridge. It is a story about a maybe near future world where there is a massive transatlantic bridge that has subsequently been abandoned. And it's not entirely clear why, but probably has something to do with things rising out of the deep. And it's about people on watchtowers and other places and telling stories of the people who now live on this largely abandoned bridge. And the world building is just fantastic. The little hints they're giving you of this world that feels very cohesive and exciting. And then third, because I think it will kind of in some ways bridge into Unwell in an interesting way, and just because it's gorgeous, the podcast Mabel, which is a terrifying set of voicemails that are beautiful and wonderful and romantic and very, very scary. I very much recommend it.
Okay, I also have three. So my three are Ars Paradoxica, which also just ended, but there's three really incredible seasons you can go back and listen to, which my elevator pitch would be that it's basically what if the Cold War had time travel? And it's super fun and is in part the brainchild of Misha Stanton, who has sound designed a couple of Our Fair City pieces in the past.
If you listen very closely on a certain episode, you can hear a real Archibald Funny Pants sounding guy.
It's pretty great. The next one is I'm also super into The Strange Case of the Starship Iris, yeah, which is being written by Jessica Best, who is also on our writing team for the new show Unwell. And I would describe The Strange Case of Starship Iris as what if you rewrote the television show Firefly, but like everyone was queer. So I'm really into this show. It's right at its early stages, I think. And then lastly, I'm going to recommend Wooden Overcoats.
Yes!
Which just finished their third season, which is like the rompiest BBC small town drama. It's about an island off the coast of the UK where it's so small there's only one of everything until someone comes and opens the second funeral home, and the rivaling funeral homes, and hilarity ensues. So it's delightful. So those are my three, all of which I enjoy very much.
I will piggyback on that because I love how Wooden Overcoats, like how much of the humor is based in like 100% like earnest character moments.
Yes.
Like there are really absurd things that happen in the show, but they all make sense because of the crazy, crazy people inhabiting this show. And a lot of the same talent is involved in a show that I am currently very enamored of called The Unseen Hour, which is a horror comedic anthology that is performed live and has kind of a Night Vale-esque setup or structure, because they have some story and then they have a guest monologue writer performer at their show, and then they have more story, and then they have a guest musical group, and then they have the finale of the story. And they riff on so many great properties. I just listened to their Shining, it's not the Shining episode, and they've done so many things that they very obviously love the vocabulary of horror, and that means that they are doing everything. They're killing it with kindness, and it's just a real charming show to get involved in. So I would check that out too.
So that should be enough content to keep you busy until February when Unwell comes out, and then you can spend all your time listening to that. So thanks, everybody who could be here tonight to answer all these listener questions. I will say we had a really great question about putting characters from the show into D&D alignments and classes. And Jim brought so many notes on this that we decided that it needed to be a written piece, not a spoken piece, because it's getting late and we're all tired and we need to go home. So I promise we're going to answer that question in a different media. But thank you all so much. This has been Listener Questions. Have a great day, everybody.
Thank you so much.
Thank you.
Thank you.
See you in the tunnels.
The Fable and Folly Network, where fiction producers flourish.